This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we find ourselves in the merry, merry month of May, moving right along. It's been a frenetic month for us at the Hoffman Center because, well, we're moving.
Yeah.
And that means that Layla and I are hitting the road, moving uptown, approximately 31 blocks.
Oh, 31 blocks.
31 blocks and across town to our new digs at near Columbus Center, Time Warner Building.
Mm-hmm.
Big statue of Columbus and that crazy traffic circle there. It's a big month of transition. We're going to continue seeing patients up there. But we also have a big transition going on in our dispensary, which is the way that people order products from what was previously known as the Hoffman Center.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, we're just going to call it Dr. Ronald Hoffman, MD, going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the dispensary, we're excited because we're having fun populating the dispensary with all kinds of great new products. And it's fully automated and very, very user-friendly. It's kind of like the Zappos of supplements.
Mm-hmm.
But with the difference that the products are personally curated by yours truly, in collaboration with Layla, and we think you're going to like it. So if you want to, I don't think you'll experience much difference, those of you who order products online. There is a landing page when you click on the store.
Yes.
Under drhoffman.com.
Mm-hmm.
With instructions to register, and then there's also a phone number that you can call for assistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, there's a product, patient assistance desk, which will help people complete their orders of supplements. So that's what's happening. More information about that in our upcoming newsletters. And so, of course, this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. That's the destination for questions related to nutrition and medicine. And we have quite a lot of questions, don't we, Layla?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, all right. let's get right into questions today.
Okay. We have an email from Julie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm an active 5'8", 140-pound, 6-year-old woman who recently had a bone density test in which the results say I have osteopenia. I'm a 60-year-old woman. Is this a real diagnosis? What do you think, Dr. Hoffman?
Oh, okay. I get the thrust of the question is, it is actually what's called disease mongering. This is a healthy person in search of a disease.
Mm.
And, you know, a healthy 60-year-old is not much you can do for her. You know, I guess with men, there's always the option to put them on a statin. With women, to some extent, you know, they're encouraging more women to take statins. So what do you do with a healthy 60-year-old? You do a bone density and you say, oh, your bone density is a little bit below what we might expect in the average 35-year-old woman, but it's not osteoporosis, hence it is a pre-disease.
Yeah.
Osteopenia is not a disease, it is a pre-disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I challenge you to find anything in the medical literature that says that osteopenia should be treated with a drug. Those drugs are designed for osteoporosis. Now, on the theory that you might prevent osteoporosis, a lot of women unnecessarily are put on these medications with a lot of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
I think that patients with osteopenia are prime candidates for nutritional intervention and lifestyle intervention.
Yeah.
And so, among the things we recommend strontium and vitamin K and Ostera, mm-hmm. sometimes Ostinol for more
right.
serious cases because it is a pricey product, mm-hmm. pretty effective for reversing bone loss. And adequate amounts of vitamin D with the right type of calcium, but not too much.
Yeah.
And now we know that magnesium is very helpful.
Right, right.
So
you would give a woman with osteopenia strontium?
No.
Or would you kind of wait
probably
until...
Probably not even.
Not even,
and it depends,
right?
because yeah. it's sort of like, unlike pregnancy, you can have a little bit of osteopenia. or a lot of osteopenia, and you
right.
could be right on the verge of osteoporosis.
Yeah.
So we'd have to see the numbers.
Yes.
And that
yes.
would be mm-hmm. what we would do in the course of an individual consult. This is actually a fairly typical consult with the Hoffman Center.
It is.
It's, woman comes in, concerned about bone loss, sometimes very advanced bone loss. I saw a woman the other day, and you saw her as well, who was a young woman, 58.
Mm-hmm.
Anything younger than me is young these days. It's 58 is very young. So, lo and behold, she had her first bone density, and her bone density was dreadful.
Oh, no.
And why could it have been dreadful? Well, she did, did she have an operation, stomach bypass? Did she have
celiac disease?
Did she take a lot of steroids?
Did she take a lot of PPIs for years?
Acid-blocking medication,
yeah.
We go through these risk factors. Mm-hmm. Totally sedentary lifestyle, mm-hmm. none of the above.
Okay.
What had happened to her is that many years ago, she had gone to a integrative doctor who was overzealous about thyroid. Mm. Thought, she was tired, she got on thyroid, very high doses, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
She says she terribly regrets that mistake. She felt gullible and she was, kind of snookered into doing that. And the net result of too much thyroid is it can promote osteoporosis. So we've been lowering her thyroid and into the safe zone, but she has a lot of bone loss.
Yeah.
So, that's the I'm just trying to point out the nature of a consultation would be to not just identify the problem and prescribe a medication. That's easy. I could see 50 patients a day just, prescribe.
Sure.
Like an assembly line. We like to delve into the causes, address the causes, correct the causes, and then maybe, possible, undertake natural therapy.
Yeah. And especially with somebody like Julie, whose mother has osteoporosis,
and
she wants to do anything she can to prevent it.
But it is a risk factor to some extent. It's sort of like saying, my father was bald.
Yeah.
Pretty common among men. So is it necessary that you're going to inherit it? No, not necessarily. Or my father had prostate cancer. Pretty common in men.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean you're going to inherit it. But it's worth recording in a history
and
noting that. There's not an inevitability to osteoporosis. In spite of family history.
Okay. Julie, sounds like you need a consult. Thank you very, very much for your question. Ah, okay.
Which, by the way, that might sound self-serving, but that's what we do.
But that's what we do, exactly.
Right. And, the additional option, and one of the nice things about working with you, is that for patients who say, I like my doctor and I want to keep my doctor, I just want nutritional advice, they don't have to see me as part of our mm-hmm. collaboration. They can go directly to you, and as long as they have medical supervision and the proper tests available, you can review their nutrition and help them with that. Now, if it requires a very deep medical analysis and judgment, then they might be well served to get a second or third opinion
Absolutely.
From me on that.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Julie. All right. Charlie sent us an email. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, perhaps you can shed light on kinesiology, usually offered by chiropractors, the practice of muscle testing to detect imbalances in the body. A friend of mine is a firm believer, says she always feels better when she gets an adjustment from her practitioner. Is this true science, or is the effect placebo?
Right. And first of all, let's not put down the placebo effect. Placebo is
powerful.
A very important healing modality.
Yeah.
So I believe that kinesiology works mm-hmm. for diagnosis and treatment,
mm-hmm.
But I don't do it. And so let me qualify that. I believe that when kinesiology is performed by someone skilled in kinesiology, it's classic operant conditioning. If you go back to your psychology class, you actually entrain the mind towards healing if it's done properly. And that's to the good, and that's fine. However, is there a scientific basis for understanding how when somebody holds a small vial of, say, weed extract in their hand, mm-hmm. and their arm is weaker when they hold it in their hand, that to me doesn't sound very scientifically plausible, although people will swear that that is the case.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand how the vibes of the wheat in the vial somehow are transmitted to the nervous system in such a way that that's the way that we can detect and diagnose health problems.
Yeah. I wonder if they did this on a single-blinded condition, like not knowing what you're holding, and yeah. If your reaction would actually change.
I bet that there are some studies on this, but the studies are probably not very robust in terms of yielding benefit. But, you know, you'd have to have a placebo control, and
right.
a large part of this is placebo, which I don't use. Conventional doctors use the word placebo as the equivalent of worthless. I use placebo as it is a helpful effect.
Yeah.
And I engage the placebo in helping patients. I don't cynically give vitamins knowing that they're worthless, hoping to get patients to believe that they work so that they will heal. Mm-hmm. That would be like a cynical use of placebo or sugar pill kind
right.
of thing.
Right, right, right. Yeah, any client who's approached and asked me about the kinesiology thing, first of all, I'm for a multidisciplinary approach, and if something is working, as you say, the placebo effect as well. Mm-hmm. Yet there are other anecdotes I hear too often that, well, I held this brand of this product and I held the other brand of this product and two different. I have to kind of wonder, you know, like I tried this CoQ10 and no, but this CoQ10.
Right. Or I've had
and
patients,
I look at the ingredients and they're the same, for example.
Or I've had patients pull out a little gadget and they take what I've given them and they do something and I go, what are you doing? And they say, I'm dousing it. And the dousing is like using some sort of wand or like pendulum-like thing.
Uh-huh.
And it moves in a certain way when it's over the object that's favorable or not favorable. And it's sort of like the way that people
are you going to have a boy or a girl kind of thing with the necklace and the ring?
Originally, it was used as a way people would find water. You know, they would find underground water sources by dousing, using a couple of sticks that would move. And maybe there's something about magnetism underground that you know, influences the movement of the sticks. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so that I find relatively implausible. But this I will say is that my training academically in college was cultural anthropology. And what I learned from cultural anthropology, you too?
Me too.
Great. Okay.
Oh
my
gosh.
So this has given us an insight into healing systems that are different from our own.
Yeah.
And in spite of the fact that they did not have robotic surgery and they did not have an armamentarium of 5,000 pharmaceutical drugs, they still had a healing system.
Yeah.
And their healing system, well, it didn't work too well. For certain things that we can now easily cure in the modern age. It did work to some extent. And as implausible as some of the methods might be, and of course some of the things they used, we now have made modern medicines.
Yes.
We made chemotherapy out of periwinkle plants, vincristine, and on and on it goes. And we made anti-malarial medication out of cinchona bark, you know, and we've made another anti-malarial medication out of artemisia plant. And it even turns out, according to a recent study, that the artemisia plant extract works stronger than the synthetic drug that's a copycat of it. Yeah. So, you know, I have tremendous respect for systems that may, to our Western eyes, seem implausible, but that work.
Like Manuka honey working for MRSA.
Oh, but that's even, but see, that actually now is scientifically grounded because you can take the Manuka honey, put in a petri dish full of staph, and it zaps it very effectively when antibiotics have failed to work. So, you know, sometimes there's a crossover to scientific validation. Sometimes we don't have the scientific validation, as in AK, applied kinesiology. But, you know, I think we have a lot of health practitioners who listen, and they will say, but I have studies.
Yeah.
And I bet they do.
Yeah,
I bet they do.
You know, sure.
And so you know, is it quackery? Is it, I wouldn't go there. You know,
No.
It's, I don't choose to use it.
Right. Okay, Charlie, thank you for your email. Joel writes us, I was just reading an article on WebMD on the worst foods that raise cholesterol. They're still claiming that saturated fat increases cholesterol and that vegetable oils should be used instead. Have they just not caught up, or do they know something we don't? No, they have not caught up.
Right. It's hackneyed advice. And, you know, the articles written on WebMD are not generally by MDs. They're by science writers. And the science writers have two ways to go. They can be independent journalists, and many of them are now, who evaluate the data, or they can hew to a party line and write, you know, just take information wrote off the American Heart Association website, which is obsolete and anachronistic.
Yeah. Here's an example. They talk about, for example, if you're going to get some Thai takeout, what's the secret ingredient? Coconut milk. But this can raise your cholesterol because,
I go through, I have to order like crates of coconut milk.
Yeah.
And if there's ever an experiment, you know, in the annals of medicine of the cardiovascular effects of coconut milk, I'm it. And the last time I checked, I had zero plaque.
There you go.
Okay. So, you know, and tremendous benefits to coconut oil in terms of cerebrovascular. I'm hoping that I can protect my neurons by using that stable saturated fat and the other medium chain triglycerides that are present in coconut milk. So, and it's that's old, that's sort of 1980s advice.
I say, very.
You know, it's
they
sort of like
update this.
Headline, new emerging group takes the nation by storm. Duran Duran.
Hey, I still like Duran Duran. But wait, this advice, let me just read the rest of the advice.
I'm trying to pick an 80s group.
Yeah. You know? Be careful of the coconut milk in your Thai takeout because it can raise your cholesterol. Yes, it makes curry smooth, but it's high in saturated fat.
Okay.
But wait, Dr. Hoffman, scan the menu instead for stir fries or noodle dishes and ask to have your dinner steamed or made with vegetable oil.
Well, you know what's nice about that?
Wow.
What's nice about that is that all you have to do is read that and do exactly the opposite.
Yes.
It's so wrong that you just have to take, it's sort of like when, your driver assist tells you to go make a right, you should make a left.
Right.
You know, it's.
Oh my goodness. And actually, Joel has another question.
Joel's a little bit of a provocateur, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's just sort of, he wants us to rank on that.
Right. Well, you hear of granola and you think of health food, right? That chewy, crunchy goodness often comes with a hefty serving of saturated fat. Even brands of low-fat granola can be higher in saturated fat than some other kinds of cereal.
Have you ever had low-fat granola? It's really like eating sawdust.
Probably.
Oh, no.
No, I've never had granola. I don't think I've had granola. I've had oatmeal, but not granola.
I went through a granola phase. You know when I went through a granola phase?
When?
I was studying in medical school.
Uh-huh.
The only way, after a while, I was so tired, the only way that I could actually get myself to sit and absorb all those facts was to put a big bowl of granola in front of me. And I would just like, sort of, it was like nervous eating, and I would go through bowls of granola.
Oh my,
until my head was swimming.
So, the recommendation, coming again to the WebMD, eat granola that is sweetened with dried fruit, honey, or maple syrup.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
well, because those are healthier than sugar, right? Because they're natural, right?
They're natural, right?
Yeah, because honey is natural.
Sure.
Maple syrup is much superior to refined sugar, right?
Right.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either that this information is still out there and it's not doing the public any good
at
all.
It's super scary.
It's harmful.
It's super scary.
So stop reading WebMD, Joel.
And there is this site that can provide you with reliable nutrition and health information. It's called Intelligent Medicine.
Website, yes.
drhoffman.com.
Yes.
Look, we're not always right, but we're way ahead of the trend on this one, and I think we'll be vindicated by history.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Joel, thank you. We have an email from Linda. Ah, dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I have inconsistently been following the autoimmune protocol diet. I'm guessing she means a paleo diet. But each time I follow it, I become constipated. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, on the SAD diet, meaning the standard American diet, including when I binge, and I have a bowel movement a day. But even on the autoimmune protocol, I drink 10 cups of water daily, a cup of bone broth 4 times a week, 8 to 11 servings of veggies and fruits, organ meat 4 times a week. What gives? Mm-hmm. I can think of one thing.
Go ahead, yeah.
Generally, when you're doing an autoimmune protocol, which is a paleolithic diet or a Whole 30 type diet, another version of a paleo diet, mm-hmm. when we first remove the grains, mm-hmm. I think what happens to the gut is, hey, what's happening to all this bulk and fiber that used to be here and mm-hmm. it's no longer?
Fuel for the microbiome.
Right. Fuel yeah. for the microbiome, some fermentation, moving everything on through. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have taken that away. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely drink enough water, eat enough fruits and vegetables and all that. But sometimes it's a little bit of a transition. I see this more often in women,
yes.
the constipation
women,
issue
women
than
generally,
men.
Generally more anatomically yeah. and hormonally, they tend to be more constipated.
Yes.
So for this person, I would suggest probiotics, but I would also suggest a lot of prebiotics.
Yes.
Could take some FOS. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a product called FiberMend, which is a type of guar gum that is
yes.
helpful and is
and
a source
flowy.
Of fiber. And Flowy, which is a prebiotic,
yeah,
which is good.
Kiwi
and then, of course,
extract.
Magnesium citrate.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Take all of those, Linda, when you're doing the autoimmune protocol so that you can get some relief. We don't like to trade one problem for another.
Yeah, but you know, what we're seeing there is, I think we're seeing a transformation of the microbiome, and there may
yeah.
be some adjustment period to adjust
right.
to the new, we're talking about feeding the bacteria that populate your intestine. And, mm-hmm. you know, certainly it isn't healthy to binge, but yeah, binging, you know, things will flow through you.
Right.
You know, but right. it's sort of like an express train and not normal bowel movements.
That's true. That's true. So, Linda, give it a little time and take the recommended prebiotics and probiotics. That
Indeed.
Will help you out a lot. Thank you for your question.
Can I take one more before we break?
Ah, okay. We've got one from Laura. I've had hyperthyroid Graves' disease for 20 years now. What do you think about taking radioactive iodine for
well,
this?
First of all, you know, having hyperthyroidism for 20 years is not good. And I'm not sure why.
On and off with medicine.
Okay, so it was controlled with medication.
Yeah.
There's a medication called yeah. propylthiouracil, PTU, which can control it, but after a while, the hyperthyroidism or the Graves' disease breaks through. Now, what mm-hmm. is hyperthyroidism? It means too much thyroid hormone. The symptoms of which are nervousness, sometimes tremor,
weight loss, hair loss,
which is interesting because you can have hair loss with low thyroid too. Definitely osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. And the risk too is to the heart because you can get palpitations, you can develop
yeah.
an enlarged heart because of overdrive. You're mm-hmm. overstimulating the heart. It's a little like taking speed for too mm-hmm. long. So, mm-hmm. It has to be treated. I mean, in terms of natural treatments, I do like to give patients carnitine.
Mm.
Carnitine seems to slow the thyroid to some extent.
They
but
have
it's not
more
that
of
effective.
A need for it, too.
And you have more of a need.
Yeah.
Also, there's an herb called bugleweed or Lycopus virginicus. That's the botanical
bugleweed.
Name. Bugleweed has some reputed effect on slowing the thyroid. You know, it's an autoimmune disorder, so sometimes an autoimmune protocol can be helpful.
Yes.
But
yes.
What's the question? The question is
radioactive iodine.
Got to pull the trigger eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So radioactive iodine is it's interesting mm-hmm. therapy because it when you take in a it's a drink you drink the radioactive iodine since iodine preferentially goes to the thyroid it's going to go to the thyroid and because it's radioactive it's going to kill off the thyroid.
Yeah.
And it's a non-surgical way to stop your thyroid from functioning.
Yeah.
And, you know, what it generally does is it leaves you hypothyroid.
Yes.
If
it's destroying thyroid.
It's destroying your thyroid.
Yeah.
So, you know, the next step is to get in quickly and determine mm-hmm. your need for thyroid medication and replacement, and mm-hmm. you should be okay.
Wow. Laura, we wish you all the best of luck. Okay.
And by the way, when you take radioactive iodine, you should not take iodine supplements because they get in the way of the radioactive iodine working. That's probably the only thing you shouldn't be taking.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, so let us pause because we divide our podcast into two parts and give us a preview of what we're going to be addressing in part two.
What other routine blood tests should I take in addition to an EBT heart scan?
Great question. We'll take that up in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, part of our ongoing Intelligent Medicine series.